another Saving Throw interview, Vigilant listeners. I'm Scott, and with me tonight is Matt Cutter of Pinnacle Entertainment. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi, glad to be with you. My name is Matt Cutter. I'm the Deadlands brand manager for Pinnacle Entertainment Group. I've been doing that for about a year now, and I pretty much write and edit the books for Pinnacle and whatever else they ask me to do.
Getting into a little inside the designer studio type moment is, how did you find yourself entering the hobby?
Entering the hobby is way back in 82 or 83. My mom got me D&D red box, basic D&D, and then I guess it was in 83 I got a Call of Cthulhu box set and a whole bunch of supplements and both boxes of Grenadier miniatures for Christmas, and it was just like the greatest Christmas gift ever, and have been involved with RPGs ever since. As far as getting involved as a writer, as a designer, I hooked up with Shane and company at Con on the Cob in Ohio a couple of years ago, and showed them some of my stuff and talked with them. They asked me if I wanted to write something for Deadlands, and got into writing the Flood plot point, and have been working with them ever since.
Okay, so you announced your job title as Deadlands brand manager, and because I don't think two tabletop companies have the same naming structure for all their positions, could you get into detail as to what the brand manager does?
Basically whatever needs to be done as far as deciding the overall direction of the line, what sort of gaming products we're going to do, how they tie in with all the other products we've got coming out, assessing new submissions that come in from new authors, prospective authors, helping to edit materials by our freelancers, and then, right down to the nitty-gritty of deciding, how the course of the Deadlands meta plot is going to go, how that's going to play out through the remaining plot point books that we have on the slate, and basically, making sure that every single product that comes out all kind of hooks together into that same storyline, nothing contradicts each other. And then, of course, the day-to-day work of writing the books and adventures that I'm personally working on for the line. So, and then, practical kind of stuff like doing the art orders for the books, corresponding with the artists, stuff like that. Actually, yesterday at work, I had to, on very short notice, put together the cover sketch for an upcoming Deadlands book. So I got myself some large paper and drew a nice sketched out approximation of what the cover is supposed to look like for our excellent artists who are in Spain. And they were waiting for that very eagerly. So it was kind of, it was kind of interesting. I haven't needed to draw something like that on short notice in a while. But in short, being the brand manager kind of means doing everything, whatever is needed at the time, do that. But mostly writing and editing.
Okay. And for those of us who haven't read anything I've written before or know what Deadlands is, could you describe the setting and what drew you in particular to it?
Sure. What drew me to it is easy, because I like any setting that has an historical basis. And the historical basis for Deadlands is history is exactly as we know it up until the year 1863. When at the Battle of Gettysburg, something terrible happened, and stories vary as to what happened or how terrible it was, but everybody pretty much agrees that the dead rose up off the battlefield and continued the fight. And ever since then, the West has been getting weirder and weirder, stories of monsters and different kinds of terrors roaming the waste, showing up in the tombstone epitaph. In 1868, a huge earthquake shatters the entire coast of California into what's called the Great Maze. Isolated mesas and and channels of seawater running between them. And in those channels is discovered a new superfuel called Ghost Rock, which is kind of like coal but burns about 10 times as long and 5 times as hot, and makes a particular wailing noise as it burns. So it's given the name Ghost Rock, and it powers the steampunk technology that begins to rise in the setting. And then you have all kinds of arcane practitioners, hucksters, magic-using, card-playing hucksters, undead gunslingers, Texas Rangers, agents with all sorts of gadgets. It's a setting that incorporates a lot of different kinds of feels and genres. Yeah. But the historical aspect is what drew me the most.
Yeah, okay, so that's what Deadlands is like coming from the guy who's in charge of it, as opposed to me, which tends to just evolve into me, you know, being a fanboy over it. It's like, oh my god, Zombie Lincoln runs the railroad!
Zombie Lincoln. Hey, Zombie Lincoln is going to be a miniature.
Ooh, that was one thing I was going to ask later on, but, all right, you say you're... Yeah, well, we'll get to it. Foreshadowing, okay. All important.
Good.
All right. You say you're in charge. You and Shaner spent a lot of time talking about where the storyline of Deadlands is going. But how hard is it to work that storyline within the confines of things that were defined in Hell on Earth or even Lost Colony, sort of later products in that same timeline?
It can be a challenge at times because there's a lot of material out there. And there's a, you know, with the vast amount of material to draw from, there's just a lot of details that need to be taken into account. Actually, Piotr Koris, who is our Savage Worlds line editor, is pretty much, his mind for Deadlands is encyclopedic. So, I mean, he can not only name you what book a particular fact comes from, but he'll tell you pretty much what page it's on or what page range to look in to find it off the top of his head, but I have to go check to make sure, that kind of thing. So, you know, he's just an amazing resource to be able to draw on, because if I have any question, I can ask him and he either knows it off the top of his head or can find it out. In general, I actually kind of like working within that framework of trying to build something that fits into the existing canon, but yet still has the ability to surprise in some way. Because, for example, and this was actually just somebody, I think somebody just posted about this on our message boards, but in the upcoming plot point book, The Last Sons for Deadlands, somebody just posted on our message boards about the final confrontation between Sitting Bull and Custer in the Sioux Nations and how that was all going to go down. Because there's actually a kind of a vague description of it in Spirit Warriors, published for Hell on Earth. And, you know, it's kind of a story told from the point of view of people in the far future after the Holocaust, nuclear Holocaust, and, you know, have a very fragmentary understanding of the history of what happened. So it gives these sparse details, and I basically took those details and, you know, used those to form the seed of, well, okay, how does their perception of what actually happened, you know, what actually happened? How do I build a plot point around that? So, anyway, in short, I start with the elements that are already established in the canon and then try to fit those together into a story that can still surprise, hopefully surprise in some way.
Here's a bit of a tricky question.
Okay.
Which one is your favorite, classic or Reloaded Deadlands?
Oh, that's actually kind of easy for me. I like Reloaded a lot better. I like Savage Worlds a lot better, and the reason for that is because it was actually Deadlands that drove my group to Savage Worlds, and we had absolutely no idea that the two of them were connected in any way at the time. But we were playing Deadlands for a while. We were playing Classic Deadlands, and a friend of mine who is, you know, a great GM in general, but this time, you know, he just really didn't have a handle on the rules. So I was playing Deadlands and loving the setting, But the rules, I felt, were, you know, I would get dull cards and be told I didn't get good enough cards to get an action. I'm thinking, man, what RPG doesn't even give you a turn? So, you know, admittedly, it was a terrible, you know, GM bad choices that led me to having that opinion of Deadlands. But anyway, we got to the point where he was saying, oh, it's too complex. There's too much stuff going on. So we thought, let's go out and try to find a simpler system that we can plug in, and we'll just use the Deadlands setting. We searched around for a while, and I found Savage Worlds and said, hey, there's all this talk about Savage Worlds. Why don't we try it out? And, you know, we were pretty thick, but eventually we discovered there was a connection between the two of them. Needless to say, we got into Savage Worlds as kind of, you know, Savage Worlds is kind of what saved us from our troubles with the classic rules. So, and, you know, just my experience of them. I know a lot of people love them, and I would love sometime to be able to play Deadlands Classic with a marshal who really knows what they're doing, because I'd really like to try it out, see how it runs, but I haven't had the chance yet.
See, my dream is to have Deadlands either version run by Sam Elliott, just because his voice seems about right for it.
Sam Elliott, nice.
Yeah.
Did Sam Elliott, did he do the narration in The Big Lebowski?
Yeah, that was him.
Nice. Excellent. One of my favorite movies of all time.
Yep. But another question about Classic versus Reloaded. Are there any directions you're taking that are for Reloaded and upcoming products that are different from Classic? Are you shying away from some of the humor or the pessimism of the original at all?
No, actually, I think, you know, in a lot of ways, I think we're trying to get Reloaded closer to the flavor of Classic in a lot of ways. You know, we brought back the Smith & Robards catalog, which is coming out later this year, and what we call the 1880 edition of the Smith & Robards catalog. And that has a lot of the tongue-in-cheek humor in it, along with, I mean, to me, Deadlands is about the horror, of course, but it's, you know, the horror married to the Western. But at the same time, it's got to have that kind of, you know, satiric, tongue-in-cheek, humorous aspect to it, or, you know, a lot of the feel is lost. And I also think that we're trying to get back to, you know, I don't want to say comic booky art, but, you know, art that's more, you know, bright colors, you know, a little more vibrant, you know, not so doer.
I guess getting in, you mentioned your boards earlier, but Savage Worlds has a huge, rabid fan base, and so does Deadlands. How has your interaction with the community surrounding that been for you?
It's been excellent. Our fans are, I mean, it's because of our fans that I can, you know, get, I mean, they give me the ability to write books and make a living writing books, and, I mean, they make our boards what they are, they make our game what it is. We do a Savage Saturday Night gathering at every convention we go to these days, and that's really, I mean, I look forward to that the most, just kind of getting together with the various people that are out there. They're, I mean, just innovating for the system, creating, I mean, the sheer amount of material you can find on the Pinnacle boards for literally any setting, or, you know, TV show, various TV shows or comic book characters with the serial numbers filed off, that kind of thing. I mean, there's just a ton of great material out there, all created by the fans, and they're great.
Okay, so are there any questions you wish fans would stop asking you?
Questions? Not really. I mean, not anything that comes to mind. I'm happy anybody wants to know something that I have to say. So any question is fine with me.
All right. And is there anything that you'd wish they'd ask? Any stories you're sitting on that you're just waiting for someone to poke you the right way to get it out of you?
Oh, secret stories. I don't know. At some point, maybe when I became the brand manager, Shane turned over a bunch of files to me. Said, I've got to send you some files. I'm going out to buy a hard drive. I'm going to send you some files. I thought, I'm going to send you some files. This is crazy. And you know, I got a little portable hard drive in the mail about a week later that just had just tons of stuff. I mean, all the classic Deadlands books and all the original art files from all those books and the Reloaded books and all the stuff and, you know, various little details, files that had to do with the Cackler or Deadlands movie script, you know, MMO plans and various things. So one of these days somebody will catch up with me at a con and hopefully buy me a drink, and I'll tell them about all the marvelous things I found in the files.
I suppose we should get into questions about the some recent and upcoming products for Deadlands.
Okay.
How about we kick it off with the Smith & Robards catalog? Tell us a bit about that.
Smith & Robards. That is, I'm excited about that. It actually incorporates most of the devices and elixirs, various gear from the classic Smith & Robards catalog. Also incorporates most of the items from the Collegium book, which has been incorporated, and there's a little bit of storyline in there revolving around the unfortunate destruction of Gamora and one of the Collegium scientists fleeing the scene of the destruction with a steamer trunk full of patents, and how those patents were joyfully welcomed by the staff at Smith & Robards and incorporated as part of their catalog. It's a large book full of all kinds of stuff to add into the Deadlands campaign, any Deadlands campaign. Also chapters on steam augmentations. Actually, that chapter was, the rules themselves were mostly devised by Clint Black, and he did just a fantastic job of putting those together and kind of reloading the idea of steam augmentations. So, you know, when a plot point revolving around Hellstrom and Salt Lake City comes out, we've already got the steam jacks running around, so, and some other surprises too. But that mostly covers that.
Just speaking of the catalog, I'm a bit curious about the actual formatting of that. Is it really just is there just going to be a big section that actually feels like a 1880 era mail away catalog, the way sort of Aurora's Whole Realms was back in second edition days?
It's something like that, actually. The catalog is actually formatted in the Explorer's Edition format, the digest size.
Yeah.
So it's a small book, and there's kind of a little intro section, and then the beginning of the catalog is actually marked by a page that Jordan Peacock, an artist who works with us, did. And it's just really, I mean, I don't want to oversell it, but to me it just, I mean, it was stunning the first time I saw it. Just really captures the feel of a period catalog. From that point on, there's kind of different background, and, you know, it's sort of a mix of actual catalog and game statistics with, you know, a lot of old-timey styled art and pictures and various, hopefully humorous, disclaimers from Smith & Robards about various gear, retractions, apologies for various malfunctions that people experienced and wrote in about, stuff like that. And then after the catalog, there's a Marshall section, which has kind of, you know, some of the secrets of Smith & Robards, some expanded rules for deliveries and mishaps and flaws and stuff like that, and the chapter on steam augmentations that I mentioned before.
Okay, that's cool. And most recently, I guess, in terms of what's already out, is the Great Northwest Trail Guide.
Yeah.
You want to just briefly go over that?
The Great Northwest Trail Guide is, it was released in PDF so far. It's basically a mini plot point. So it incorporates most everything you'd find in a plot point book. There's not really much of a player section, but there's a little, there's a short epitaph section at the beginning that's meant to be handed out to players. Then a number of locations and a short, I think it's 4 or 5 episode plot point set in the Northwest. And actually, one of our upcoming releases for this year, the two trail guides that have been released so far, South of the Border and the Great Northwest, as well as the upcoming Great Weird North trail guide, which covers Alaska and British Columbia. All three of those trail guides are going to be bundled into an Explorer's Edition sized print publication. And that's also going to be coming out sometime this year.
All right. And is this going to be like the Fantasy Companion, where you bundle up a bunch of PDFs and then there's a little bit of extra stuff, new material for the print version?
Not for the Deadlands Trail Guides. Those are, there's a new cover for the print book that we've got in the works, but the interior is basically just three PDFs bundled in print form.
Okay, cool. And after Great Weird North, are we going to be seeing any other trail guides?
Actually, the next trail guides after Great Weird North, there'll be a little bit of a break, and then later in 2011, possibly early 2012, the next two trail guides will go back east. So there'll be a back east the north and back east the south, and we'll probably follow our same sales model of putting them out as PDFs and then releasing them as a bundled book together. But I'm kind of excited about that. That's going to another thing that came up on our boards was mention of some new rail companies and new rail barons that first showed up in the novelization of The Flood called Deluge.
Mm-hmm.
And so those new rail barons are actually going to really show up and start having an influence by the time we get to those back east trail guides.
Sounds very great. And is that just going to, and those trail guides for back east, more plot points in those, or are we going to be seeing just material for...
Those will follow the same mini plot point formula. As far as full plot points, this year we've got The Last Sons, which is the second of the Deadlands plot point books. Deals with Raven and war in the disputed territories. That's going to be coming out this year, probably coming out in the summer, I would imagine, Gen Con.
All right, I guess that transitions into... I'm going to pump you for as much information as I can about the third and fourth major plot points. How are those coming along?
I've got ideas laid out for both of them. The third one is farther along as far as the ideas go. I can tell you that the working title, plan title for that one is Stone and a Hard Place. And obviously we'll deal with the Servitor Stone, and the geographical area it covers is the Southwest. And... in a nutshell, the idea for that book is to just really bring out as much of the spaghetti western aspect of the setting as we possibly can, because it covers Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, a little bit of California. It's exactly the right area. The servitor is an undead gunslinger, and it really lends itself to that kind of a feel, I think. So we're going with that. My goal right now, I have a list that I'm compiling of the titles of spaghetti westerns, and I want every single header for every section in the book to be the title of a spaghetti western, or at least as many of them as I can possibly get in there.
Okay, and as for the fourth one, just in the outline phase right now?
In the outline phase, that one deals with Hellstrom and, City of Gloom, Salt Lake City, the Republic of Deseret. And, an outline as of now, a glimmer in my eye.
All right. I just want Mormons and crazy robots stomping around. But...
You'll get them.
Yeah. But I guess you mentioned the third one would be mostly spaghetti western oriented, but do you feel that the feel or the tone of each plot point is particularly different? Like, how hard do you work to make them feel distinct from one another?
Well, they're really different from each other in the setting rules, as, each one has its own setting rules, and each, we're pretty much setting it up where each geographical region of the Weird West has setting rules influenced by and corresponding to whichever the Reckoners kind of hold sway over that area. So the Flood has a lot of rules about starvation and hunger and how fast food rots within the area. The next book coming out, The Last Sons, the setting rules have to do with the disputed territories, which are ruled over by war, and how nobody gets along, and, you know, any reaction rolls you ever make are at a certain penalty to them because, you know, no one ever starts out less than intolerant, that kind of thing. The, you know, and Death's Realm in the Southwest will have its own, life-sapping properties. So it's basically in the setting rules for each area where we try to bring that out.
All right. Okay. Next up on the list of products I know you're making is the Book of Relics. How did you handle submissions for all that?
Well, the Book of Relics is kind of, I'm sorry to say, the Book of Relics is in a little bit of a limbo right now because we're basically have a bunch of submissions in, but not really enough to make a full book out of them. So, we've got the submissions. We're putting those together, and kind of it's unfortunately an as time permits kind of a situation because time is limited.
All right.
Whole bunch of books to write, and you know the day job and the kids and all that kind of stuff. So, but it's still on the list, on the plate. It's just going to be a few months before we're able to really dive into it.
Okay, and even just looking over the early stuff, any particularly exciting or interesting ideas floating around?
For Deadlands coming up?
For the Book of Relics in particular, where, you know, just how creative were these submissions?
They were, a few of them were very surprising. That's all I can say right now.
Well, every time there's a chance to openly submit magic items or relics, there's one idea that I keep meaning to do but can never nail down mechanically, which is the rug that ties the room together. I can't figure out how that would work as a game mechanic beyond just, well, the room looks really balanced.
You know, there are a few people who can really say what it is that goes into a rug tying the room together. But yeah, man, you know, I mean, it's like, you know.
It's just like your opinion, man.
Man.
Okay. The other big thing that we've alluded to is your deal with Reaper minis. We've already seen the prototypes for the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. If you're listening to this now, click. It was the big freaking picture on the page that described the interview before you click this link.
Awesome.
Remember that. But how excited were you to get this deal? And
so excited, but go on.
Yeah, okay. And we've seen these four. What other characters can we expect to see in terms of canon or even just like generic banditos or, automata?
As I mentioned before, we've got undead Abe Lincoln, a.k.a. Andrew Lane, is going to be coming as one of our minis down the line. We're going to do some of the creatures. Let's see, we've got a desert thing, which is kind of like, if you're not familiar with it, it's kind of like the Sarlacc from Return of the Jedi, but smaller. So it's kind of a flat mouth with tentacles coming out of it that lays on the table. What else did I put into the plan? I put into the plan some a prairie tick swarm. You know, the Reaper makes some minis that are like a bat swarm or something like that, kind of a tall miniature that's made up of a bunch of little creatures.
Yeah.
So we'll have one of those prairie ticks and maybe a larger prairie tick queen in that blister pack with them. And I also put in for a set of gloms. So a two-corpse glom and a three-corpse glom. And that pretty much covers what we've got coming for that. As far as the other types of characters, we didn't want to overlap with Reaper's Chronoscope line because they've got a whole bunch of Old West minis in that line, and they basically cover a lot of the character archetypes in Deadlands are covered by that line. And then, you know, we're going to add in a mad scientist, female mad scientist, female Indian shaman, stuff like that. So trying to fill out the variety of character types while not overlapping with other stuff that's commonly available.
Okay. And any chances of getting a Hanging Judge mini, just for me?
There is a very good chance that we will do another version of the Hanging Judge. It's such an iconic creature for Deadlands. We would have to do that at some point. just for you.
Okay. Just because I asked. Nice. All right, and how much involvement do you have with the upcoming comics?
My involvement right now is basically I've actually had a chance to look at the covers and scripts and conceptual drawings for the various issues and stuff. And, I mean, I've been a comic book fan for a long time, and it's just really, really exciting to be able to watch the process as it's going on. And the stuff that they're coming up with is just amazing. Amazing stuff. It's going to be 4 issues going from June to September, I believe. And so there'll be, you know, one story in each issue, and then there's kind of a little bit of a running story that runs through all 4 of the issues at the end. So if you buy all 4, then you get that 5th story. But they knock my socks off.
Is there any word as to whether or not this might spin into something bigger, like a short-run series, if this does well, or even just a trade paperback collection down the line?
That's still totally open at this point. You know, I think we're waiting to see how this does. I've seen some of Visionary's promotional materials, and, you know, there's the possibility of more Deadlands fiction, as well as more comic books. So we're kind of waiting to see how this goes. We're excited about it, and you know, possibility is definitely wide open for as much of that as there's demand for.
Are we going to see, I should have asked this earlier, but are we going to be seeing novelizations of the other plot points the same way we had Deluge doing the, fictionalizing the Flood?
Possibly. We don't have a concrete plan for it right now, but there's, you know, always the possibility of doing that. Even if I have to write it myself.
All right. Now getting into stuff that's a little less concrete in the Deadlands future. We have I heard some mumblings of doing an Explorer's edition of Deadlands. Has that been delayed because of the new hardcover re-release you just did?
I guess maybe delayed a little bit, but it actually has not been delayed that much. The Explorer's edition of Deadlands Reloaded, separate, you know, Player's Guide and Marshall's Handbook, should be available sometime this year. I estimate that for probably Origins or Gen Con as well.
Okay.
Probably we'll be sharing the shelf at that point, and, you know, whichever format people like the best, they can pick up.
All right.
Definitely. I wanted to add, though, that when we go to the Explorer's edition of those the most recent hardbacks, there are no substantive changes to the rules or to the information at that point. It's basically, you know, the same book in a different, more portable format, but there's no updating or anything like that. So people who already own the book shouldn't feel like they're compelled to buy it yet again.
All right. And yeah, see, I just like the Explorer's edition because it's, I just turned into a Savage Worlds drug dealer. It's like, I will go out, buy 3 or 4 copies for my gaming group, and be like, it's only $10 out of my pocket, so I can go, okay, here you go, first hit's free.
Scott, I love you.
Yeah, I've bought about 4 or 5 copies of Savage Worlds Explorers Edition, trying to convert people.
That's great. I do the same thing. I give it away. I gave away a copy to my uncle, and I came back home, and I looked at my shelf like, damn it, I don't have any more copies of the Explorer's Edition. I actually had to buy a couple at the, we had the Syndicon here in D.C. last weekend, and so I went into the exhibit hall and actually bought 2 copies of the Explorer's Edition because I just need to have some around. My supply ran low.
All right, and any ideas on how, on a timeline for a Hell on Earth Reloaded or Lost Colony Reloaded?
Lost Colony Reloaded is way out there. I just started a thread last month or something like that, asking people to, you know, what do you want to see in Lost Colony? What do you feel that the old version failed to do? What more do you want? Pretty much the consensus there was follow through on the promise of the original setting, give the planet Banshee its due, but do a lot of expanding so that there are actually places to go and, you know, more of a real fleshed out setting, places to go, things to do. As for Hell on Earth Reloaded, I think we're still expecting to see that sometime this year, finally.
Oh my.
I know We keep saying that every year, but you know, this year I think the magic is going to happen.
All right, this is the one.
This is the one. That's right. 2011, the year we make hell on earth happen.
Okay.
I'm confident that it can happen. It's just, you know, most of the time, actually all the time, when things get delayed like this, unless it's just a matter of waiting for it to come back from the printer, the delay is most often just because, you know, something's not quite right. Something's not quite right with the plot point, or something's not quite right with the mechanics, and you know, we don't want our fans to end up being our beta testers in that regard. So it's best to get everything right before we send it out there. But doing our best here.
And if it does come out this year, what might we see in Hell on Earth? Is it going to be just a standalone source book? Is it going to have a plot point in there?
You know, I thought it was going to be one book, but I actually saw Teller at the convention this weekend, and now, as I understand it, Hell on Earth Reloaded is slated to be one open setting book, you know, in the vein of Deadlands Reloaded, and then followed by one plot point, which picks up about 6 months after the events of the Unity.
Okay. And, all right, any other Deadlands projects on the horizon that you might want to tease us with?
Well, let's see. Currently, I'm working on an adventure, probably, you know, in the vein of Coffin Rock. Thinking about releasing it in a print format that's similar to Coffin Rock, and that's going to be called Return to Manitou Bluff. Manitou Bluff, which, if you're a longtime fan of Deadlands, you would know that Manitou Bluff was conspicuously absent from the Flood, vanished from California as of the Battle of Lost Angels. I'm working on an adventure that kind of explains where Manitou Bluff went, and has a little yarn spun around that conceit. And after that, I'm into the actual writing of Stone and the Hard Place. So we're looking to have the third plot point follow a little closer on the heels of The Last Sons than The Last Sons followed after the Flood.
Just two to finish up. One is that because we're a website that spends a lot of time, most of our time, talking about video game RPGs, do you have any favorites of your own?
Video game RPGs. You know, the last, this is, I'm really going to date myself here, but the last video game RPG I played all the way through was Resident Evil 2, and it scared the hell out of me.
All right, and any final thoughts to close us all out on?
Just want to say thanks to all the Deadlands fans who have been sticking with us through the years, and thanks to all the Savages who make what we do worthwhile, and we hope we can continue to entertain and surprise you in the future.
And thank you all for listening. That's been a Saving Throw interview. Later.